Good afternoon, everyone. This is Andrea, and I'd like to welcome you to our May webinar and podcast episode, and also acknowledge our webinar partner this month, Axos. I'll share a bit more information about Axos later in the session. A quick reminder on asking questions for today. If you're joining us live, you have the opportunity to ask a question at any time. Just use the Q&A function on your Zoom control panel, and that will be answered at the end of the session. If you're viewing the recording or listening to the podcast later and would like to ask a question, feel free to contact us directly at smithinc.com. I'll now hand over to Mark Holton, Smithinc Director, who is presenting today's session on the benefits of working with not-for-profits. Over to you, Mark.
Thanks, Andrea, and good morning, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our May webinar. And the title is The Benefits of Working with Not-for-Profits. Okay, question. How do you define or measure the benefits of helping others and making a difference? I've been very fortunate. Today, in the half hour we're together, I just want to talk to you a little bit about my experience, because I suppose that's the only way I can do it. But I have had a couple of really good questions through that relate to compliance and relate to time and also relate to accounting that I'd like to address at the end of the session, because I can give you a couple of examples of how I've attacked this over the years. When I look at my experience with not-for-profits, let me outline what that is. You know, I've been a board member and Honorary Treasurer at Ronald McDonald House, Greater Western Sydney, as many people would know online, for the past 28 years. So that's 28 lots of board meetings every month or 2 months, 28 lots of AGMs, 28 lots of annual financial reports, treasurer's reports, and everything else. I chaired or founded and chaired the, oh, sorry, I'll go back again, was the founding chair of the Central Coast Academy of Sport. We've now merged that into the regional academies of sport, so that the Central Coast, Newcastle, and Hunter have come together. One of the best and smoothest merge I've ever been involved in. And I've been involved in a few over the years with accounting firms. So that's been for the last 18 years. I'm Vice Chair of Bendigo Bank in East Gosford and Districts on the Central Coast of New South Wales, Board Member and Honorary Treasurer for a race club on the Central Coast, the Gosford Race Club, and Central Coast Basketball. And just recently, taken a role as Director of Finance with the New South Wales Rugby League Referees Association. As an old dinosaur, Australian Rugby League referee from the 80s and early 90s and that sort of stuff. I want to give back to an association that gave me an awful lot of support in the early days. Guys, I've also been on a couple of other boards, in fact, much more than two, and I'm also on the boards of a couple of corporate organizations, so commercial type boards in the past. So I suppose the reason for putting that up is to show you that I've had a fair bit of experience. I've had an awful lot of learnings throughout that process. I've seen a lot of boards grow. I've nurtured, developed, put governance in place, and survived COVID. Wasn't that a challenge with the not-for-profit market? And now, as we move forward and we go to 1 July, we're looking at a new system of not-for-profit reporting that will impact on 150,000 not-for-profits in the country. Now, I think we need, if not today, to have a bit of a discussion around that. Perhaps that's a future webinar. Without doubt, the two significant achievements I think I've had in my board career has been Ronald McDonald House, Greater Western Sydney, and also the Central Coast Academy of Sport. And I want to talk to you a little bit about those organisations and how we do business, give you an idea of how you might do business in your board and not-for-profit career as well. Firstly, Ronald McDonald House Charities, Greater Western Sydney. The old house, and I got involved with this, as I said, 28 years ago. I went down to Ronald McDonald House Westmead, it was known then, to help them with their MYOB system. MYOB gave a complimentary copy of their software to every Ronald McDonald House in the country. I think it was about 11 back then. One of the things I found very early in the piece was that the information that was being provided to the board was not disseminated in a manner that allowed them, one, to understand it, two, to interpret it, and three, to make smart strategic decisions about the future of this organization. So things had to change. The old house was an 18-room facility built approximately 42 years ago. So 9 rooms on the east wing, 9 rooms on the west wing, with a large communal area you can see there. And one thing that staggered me in the early days there was the cost of these playgrounds, and more importantly, the cost of the soft floor that goes underneath them. Now, that was about a $4 million build 40 odd years ago. And the reason I put the old house is that through that house, I met some beautiful people. I met some families, I met some lovely children, I met some corporate folk, and I met some board members that have become lifelong friends and associates over that period of time as well. Why do Ronald McDonald Houses exist? Certainly, because children who have family staying with them tend to be at their absolute sickest and have travelled the furthest distance for care and spend the longest amount of time in hospital. That's a fact. Ronald McDonald Houses provide accommodation for those families with children who are suffering from, serious illness. Okay, and from day one, when I first walked in there, saw a couple of families, had a chat to them, met a very persuasive CEO of the day. I figured I was hooked a little bit. Probably that's why I'm still there. In a recent study, over 2,000 family members that have been to a Ronald McDonald House confirmed that staying close to the hospital is an extreme benefit. Okay, for the family, for the physiological well-being, psychological rather well-being, and for the perceptions of child recovery. And that's proven by fact around the world. Welcome to one of the most significant projects I've been involved in my board career, and that's the new 60-room Ronald McDonald House. Opened about 3, almost 4 years ago, I can remember, on Valentine's Day. A 60-room facility that cost over $40 million to construct. And the funny thing about constructing something like that is it costs $40 million to fundraise. And the challenge of that particular board strategically was this. One, we were turning away one out of two families at the old 18-room facility. Two, that is unacceptable to the board as a strategic vision. Three, we needed to get bigger. We needed to provide more support to more families that were coming to us that in the past we either had to put them up in commercial accommodation or actually we weren't able to take them in at all. And third, we committed. We did the work, we did the study, we did the strategy. And isn't strategy such an important part of being on a board? To be able to get to the point of looking at what you see today. And every time I drive there, I get a bit melancholy about the old place that was across the road. That's now gone and replaced by a multi-story car park at Westmead Children's Hospital for staff, which is another thing that bugs me. That's another story. But I look at this and think how proud. Now, what a great achievement the board of the day and the boards that have followed have actually provided. And that's where we go with the new house. The new house is bigger, is offering more facilities, full commercial kitchens, full outdoor spaces, 60 rooms, multiple setups in those particular rooms, and a much, much better laid out facility than the previous one ever was. But then that's probably the difference between a 4 million one 40 years ago and a 40 odd million one 3 or 4 years ago. But it's certainly strategically one of the biggest challenges. And one of the greatest achievements I think I've been involved in, with so many wonderful people on the board and a fantastic staff that might do miracles every single day. That facility, okay, accommodates 371 people each night. And I'll send you out these slides as I always do. And I'm not going to read through them now, but as you can see, it's a big deal. Biggest problem we have with the old house is parking. Now we've got 90 spaces, majority undercover. We have a recreational oval. We have a bike path for the kids. We have accessible bathrooms. We have commercial laundries, commercial kitchens. We have self-contained apartments. We have 24/7 reception and a true reception area, which was never built into the old one. It's a much, much better facility. Okay, how can anyone lend a hand to Ronald McDonald Houses? Well, it's a variety of different ways, but I want to talk to you about two of them. Years ago, we had an application from a local car club at Westmead saying, can we come down there, cook a barbecue for the families and sing them a song? They were a barbershop quartet. And you've got to look at the LH&S issues with that and all the rest of it. We said, yeah, why not? From that, this program has grown and taken off dramatically right across the country. And it's now known as Meals from the Heart. It's an opportunity for corporates to come in and cook a meal for the families, have a meal with the families, wash up afterwards, you can't get out of that. And then use that as your corporate support day. There's many accounting firms that have come in over the years at Ronald McDonald House, Greater Western Sydney. We actually do it as a board, and it's a real leveler. We have commercial chefs that organise all the meals, which you have to do in a 60-room facility. In the old one, it used to be bring your stuff in and barbecue it. Okay, they put the menus together, they work with us, they tell us what to do, but you're the one that does it. And so many accounting firms, let alone other businesses, have said, what a great opportunity to promote this and be involved with it and help out a family just with a hot meal at the end of a really trying long day. That's a wonderful way to get involved. Secondly, pick up the tab. You might or might not know that it costs Ronald McDonald House Charities, Greater Western Sydney, in fact, a charity across the board in Australia, roughly about $160 to support a family with a sick child for one night. That's after government funding. So when you look at 60 rooms multiplied by 160 a night, multiplied by occupancy rates in the 90%, you're looking at roughly millions and millions of dollars to be able to keep the doors open that are not covered by government or covered by the family because the family doesn't pay. It might be partially supported by government authorities, but at the end of the day, you've got to fundraise. So every year, fundraising is a major challenge. Donations, corporate, individual, golf days, race days, telethons, as we've done in the past, and other key events are critical to be able to pick up the operational loss and turn it into a surplus from non-operational funding. So fundraising is the critical thing. This was an idea that came about by taking the entire management team up to the Global Business Camp in Queensland. And we worked on the charity. I was up there as the board member working with them. And one of the people said to me, Mark, how much does it cost to have a family? I said, roughly about 150 as it was then. She said, why don't we do a campaign to allow anyone to pay 160 and by that they support one family for one night? I said, what a brilliant idea. What can we call it? Someone else said, pick up the tab. And that's where it was born, at the Global Business Camp with the management team of Greater Western Sydney. All brilliant people. And that model now has raised millions of dollars right across the country. It's amazing how the one percenters, the little things, can have such an incredible impact when you challenge your team and get them out of their comfort zone and maybe invest in them in the form of education. And out of that, brilliant things happen. The second one I wanted to talk to you about today is the Central Coast Academy of Sport. And I want to have a little bit of time at the end of this to answer some great questions that have come in from Harry, Lucy, and surprisingly, Adrian. I know Adrian well. I think someone might have written it for him. Before I do, the Central Coast Academy of Sport. This is something I got involved in through a good friend of mine, a fellow called Ian Rebilliard, who asked me, would I be interested in helping him put together an Academy of Sport on the Central Coast? I said, why? He said, so many young, talented athletes have to travel to Sydney or Newcastle to be able to get elite level coaching and development. Out of that puts enormous pressure on the parents. And the reason we live in the area we do on the Central Coast in New South Wales is because we want to. So the more time spent away, the less enjoyable, the biggest challenge that we have with parents. So we decided to go down that particular pathway. The Central Coast Academy of Sport, now the Regional Academies of Sport, Central Coast, Hunter, and Newcastle, is a not-for-profit organisation that provides opportunities for aspiring young athletes, coaches, and officials and administrators since we kicked it off in 2004. We've provided over 3,000 plus scholarship positions to Central Coast athletes, and you can double that when it comes to Newcastle and Hunter. We have programs now across all three areas, and the beauty of the merger is being able to deliver our mission to more people in a more economic manner and provide greater opportunities for more. That's a benefit of a not-for-profit. The programs are known for its high-quality access, and it has some of the best coaches in Australia and overseas, for that matter. to help further an athlete's career. But doesn't this work on the athlete's career? It's the athlete's development. It's their ability to interact. It's their ability to set pathways for their future as well that we provide. The board of directors, fantastic people. Now, this has changed slightly since the merge that we went through with the old Hunter Academy of Sport, but I'm fortunate to chair it. Ian Rebillion is a good friend of mine and the absolute lifeblood and support, now backed by another fellow called Brett O'Farrell, who's equally as brilliant as Ian is. We have an emeritus director. The reason we went down the emeritus director pathway, something you might be interested in, we've done this with Ronald McDonald House as well, is that sometimes directors leave, but when they leave with an awful lot of knowledge, an awful lot of IP, and still an interest in keeping check on what's going on. The emeritus director can come to any meeting, any event, come to a board meeting, they can provide input, they just can't vote. I think it's a brilliant way of retaining interest in an organisation and retaining the IP that might have been built up over many, many years. Certainly, that was the case from Mike Rabbitt. Many would remember Mike as a sports telecaster at NBN Television. I won't go through the rest of the guys there. You can see it there, but they're all equally as brilliant and equally as committed as any board I've ever worked with. Our athletes, well, we've got 242 total participants, 54% female and 46% male. 80% of them aged between 13 and 18, because that's the development pathway. 13 talented programs and 12 different sports. And that's just the Central Coast. Now, with the Hunter, we're talking about doubling that, if not more. We contribute $3 million to the economy. We have 106 volunteers, over almost $500,000 in volunteer value. And aren't volunteers such a critical part of a not-for-profit survival? Okay, that was challenged in COVID when we had to push away some of the volunteers. But we've got to have development programs to bring them back. Their investment, which is instead of having to pay commercial dollars for the labor we need, is critical, absolutely critical. We return to the government, we create jobs in the region. We have a multitude of coaches and volunteers. The board are all volunteers, as is Ronald McDonald House. Link community supporters and organisations, corporate partners, and 115 years of collective staff board experience. If I was to apply that equation to Ronald McDonald House, I think it could very well be double. Okay, these are the type of people that commit their time and their hearts towards causes they believe in. And I challenge everyone online today, and I'll ask you later, what's going to be your contribution to this? See, this is just two organisations I've been fortunate enough to fall into. Ronald McDonald House, I was there setting up MYOB. Okay, I met the then treasurer. He then moved off to be the CEO of the charity for 20 years and said to me, "Would you stand in my position?" People have asked, "How did I get involved?" I can tell you, right position, right time, fate. The Academy. I had a good mate call me and say, "Would you be on a journey?" And I could see the passion in his eyes and his voice. And I figured, one, how can I not be? And two, he's one of my best mates. So, of course, I was going to help him. And geez, I've enjoyed that pathway. Met some brilliant people. People often ask me, "Have you made money out of these?" And the answer is no. I didn't get involved for the money. And that's not some, holier-than-thou comment. I got involved because I wanted to help others and I saw a need. What I have got out of it is brilliant contacts, brilliant friends, associates I could call tomorrow, ask for a favor, and they would be there unreservedly. How do you value that? At the end of the day, how do you value giving back to help people that otherwise need help in the most challenging time of their lives? Or their development. So I put this question up to you guys, and that's what challenges do boards of not-for-profits face? Well, number one, you probably or probably or probably have by now anyway, but in the 2022 budget, the Treasurer announced a new reporting system for not-for-profits that would impact on 150,000 not-for-profits. It does not impact on Ronald McDonald House because we are registered with the ACNC, the Australian Charities Commission. and as a charity, we are exempt. Okay, it also doesn't affect tax-paying not-for-profits, but it affects 150,000 others, like the Regional Academies of Sport, the Central Coast, the Hunter Academies of Sport, the Basketball Association, the race clubs, the sporting organisations, the community organisations, that are all not-for-profits, having self-elected their status. They now need to report it digitally from 1 July and have that report in by 31 October. Yeah, it's going to be simple, or so they say, as far as lodging it. But you are lodging a report saying that my governance is spot on. My constitution has all the provisions that specify not-for-profit specificity, and on many of the constitutions I've looked at since this was re-announced about a month ago, are leaking two clauses. One, the not-for-profit clause, and two, the clause that specifies disposition of assets upon winding up. So a reality check, a compliance check on their constitution, their governance and everything else. Call me a skeptic, maybe I've been in the tax game too long. I think there's going to be audit activity out of this. I think there's going to be challenges. And I think there's going to be challenges in line with why should you be getting tax exemption when you don't satisfy the full requirements of a not-for-profit in this country. I suppose we'll see as that goes through the process. Other challenges? Certainly governance. Okay? Governance as far as putting in the policies, the procedures. And one in particular that I've found with a lot of not-for-profits I've got involved in and I've driven hard, and that's conflict of interest. I know Harry put in a question around conflict of interest. They're often created by good-hearted people that put up their hands and say, I want to help, but then they have an intricate interrelationship with the organisation, like their mums and dads of sporting organisations. The real question then is, are you making a decision in line with the best interests of the organisation, or does the fact that your child's playing there and could disadvantage through that decision have any impact? When should I put my hand up and say, excuse me, Mr. Chair, I'm conflicted, I will leave the meeting and come back when you discuss that? Or how often has a chair said, I think Paul, Sue, Sally, you are conflicted, can you please leave the room as we discuss this particular thing? Good governance is critical. So having good governance as in policies, procedures, conflict of interest, compliance, you know, policies around working with children and young people and making sure that's all done absolutely correctly. One of the greatest challenges is not-for-profit, I think, is that you're playing with other people's money. It's not yours. So there's a stronger fiduciary responsibility on getting it right and getting it right the first time. And I know that's the business we're in. As far as boards I've worked with, disseminating data, financial data to non-financial people is a challenge. We've got to look for ways and means of being able to communicate the story behind the numbers. We've got to look at how we take numbers and turn them into knowledge. And I've used a variety of tools I've used with my clients through my not-for-profit work with not-for-profit boards, even to the extent of working a top 10 KPI analysis. It's my area of interest, guys, but it's one of the greatest challenges. How do I get non-financial people to understand it's their fiduciary responsibility as a director to understand the financial position and to ask good questions? There's a million other ones, guys. They really are. Happy to cover those offline because time is killing us. But let me leave you with this thought before we do go to questions. What impact will you make in the future? As an accountant, I think part of being on a non-for-profit board is pretty well is either going to be put in front of you or you're doing it or you've already done it. Okay? When you sit back at the end of the day and you put your head on the pillow and you have to live with your own conscience, as I often do, and think, how could I have done it better, smarter? What should I have said? What shouldn't I have said? You know, how do you measure the impact of helping others? And I'll leave you with that thought. I really will. Guys, thanks for your attention. Andrea, I don't know if anybody's logged any questions as we've gone through this, but I do have a question from Lucy, which I thought was good. Thanks, Lucy, for this. It says, quote, I'm looking forward to hearing your story as a board member of charities and not-for-profits. How can we balance our work time and volunteer time and family time? Gee, that's a good question, Lucy. And I've had that battle over the years. I've often believed if you want something done, you ask a busy person. And whether they're doing it at night or before work or on planes or sitting in airport lounges, they get it done. How have I balanced my time? Not particularly well, I've got to be honest. Did work suffer to some extent in the early days? It did when we were setting up systems, processes, and people. Does it impact it these days? Very rarely. Very rarely. But part of being on a not-for-profit board is you've got to deal with unexpected occurrences, like a commercial board. And I've long believed that if you are truly committed, you're a player, not a passenger. I have no time for passengers. I'm getting old, I'm getting cranky. I can't understand people being on boards to make CVs look good. It is a balance, Lucy, it really is, but it's not something I would say to you should discourage you from giving it a crack. Okay, at some stage with anything, you've got to take a step off the curb. But you do need to get that mix right between what you've got there and what you need to do. Adrian Atchison from Thrive Advice in Orange. Hey, Adrian. It says, what is the year-end reporting obligations for not-for-profits, and who do you recommend be responsible for those? At the end of the day, the person responsible for it is the board, and the elected person on the board that generally does this is the treasurer or director of finance, call it what you will. In my time, when I started with Ronald McDonald House, I was down there pretty well every week because there was only 1.5 staff members. The half was the financial manager, who also was the house manager. Couldn't ask that person to get involved too heavily in that, but they could certainly do the day-to-day processing. At the end of the day, who does the can sit with? Me. I'm the treasurer, I'm the board member. Ultimately, it sits with my fellow board members, but they're entrusting me to be able to make sure things are done properly, governance is controlled, and at the end of the day, you can't delegate responsibility. How do we ensure the next committee or person is aware of the processes? I'm a massive believer in knowledge retention. I really am. With the boards I've worked in, I've put board portals in place. That board portal is a secure environment that board members and key staff members have access to. That's where we store our constitution, our minutes. That's where we maintain all our board meeting protocols. It's a secure, structured portal arrangement. And I've seen some boards do this with tools like SharePoint as well. I have a preference for the purposely designed board portals. But I think as a board director, you've got to leave the board in a better position than when you found it. And if knowledge management isn't being tracked for the future, we've got to look at ways and means of doing so. Also, I think as part of that process is a good system that keeps track of volunteers. And not just when they do stuff, but how much they commit. It's wonderful at a volunteer recognition session to talk about John Smith, who's donated 500 hours of time to the charity or the not-for-profit. It comes back, Adrian, to building the right infrastructure in the not-for-profit. And that takes time, costs money, needs resources. But ultimately, when you walk out the door, it's got to be in a better position. And that the information that you've accumulated over the time has to be capable of being passed to the next level. And Adrian, Harry also asked a question about not-for-profit organizational compliance difficulties, handling complex administration, conflicts of interest. You've got to have a conflict of interest policy, and you've got to have a conflict of interest register. And every board meeting, the chair has to ask that question, so it needs to be on the agenda of every board meeting. Does anybody have any updates to the conflict of interest register? Anything to amend, anything to remove, anything to add? And that register becomes the compliance document that you maintain as chair, and you can make a decision if necessary when there is a conflict and deal with it accordingly. As a board member, you need to acknowledge your own conflicts and voluntarily submit to the actions that are required to do so. I find many not-for-profits at sporting club level and that sort of stuff do not have the policies and procedures in place that some of the bigger charities do. But at the end of the day, not-for-profit legislation, and I guarantee you, with this new reporting system, the ATO will not discriminate on size. It'll come back to do you have your act together? Guys, I love this stuff. I love being involved with great people. I've enjoyed my career, something fierce with boards and everything else, and would love to help you if you need and share that in the future. If anybody wants to have a chat with me offline and talk about their board career, just reach out to me at mark.holton@smithinc.com and we'll do a bit of a webinar and a chat. No cost, of course. And if I can help you a little bit to steer you on that direction and that pathway, it'll be my absolute pleasure. At that point, Andrea, I'm over time. I love this stuff. I'm going to pass back to you just to run through a quick conclusion.
Great, thanks, Mark. If you can put the next slide on, please, with Axos. And just a reminder, anybody, if you'd like to ask a question of Mark now, please just type that into your ask a question little thing on the control panel there, and I'll read that out. And while we're waiting to see if anybody does have any questions, I just wanted to thank Axos, the business process outsourcing, who are our webinar partner this month. And a little about Axos. Founded 15 years ago, Axos has developed a strong footprint supporting accounting firms, financial planners, and mortgage brokers with comprehensive back office services. Their tailored solutions help build capacity and enhance processes efficiency. As an outsourcing partner trusted by over 200 Australian businesses in the financial services sector for customizable outsourcing solutions to ensure client success and sustained development, please feel free to reach out to Axos directly for more information. Thanks, Axos. Oh, yes. And Young Guns, we do have a question. Actually, Elizabeth just said thank you, Mark. Thanks,
Pleasure, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, for being online today. Got a moment if anybody does have any other questions, but just a little reminder about a Young Guns workshop. We've just opened that up. Was it last week, Mark? Time
Yeah,
is
last
flying,
week.
isn't it?
Yep.
So it's all online. We've still got a few things to finalize on the program, but the majority is there. We've got early bird, super early bird pricing happening till the 30th of June, 21st and 22nd of October on the Gold Coast.
Yeah, and guys,
Any
last year we had just under 100 people there up on the Gold Coast, 100 of the most dynamic, creative, innovative, and fearless young people I've met in the accounting industry. And as I said to David afterwards, geez, I think the industry's in good hands with some of the young guys coming through. Love to see you there or other members of your team or anybody coming back. We've switched up the agenda and the speakers a little bit this year, but it's the one event in our industry that focuses on behavior. How to lead, how to manage, how to present, how to engage, how to ask the right questions. It's about all those soft skills that we need in this industry, but unfortunately, we tend not to get it in our earlier studies. So I'd love to see you there. Andrew, I have one question from a anonymous attendee asking, do you recommend director insurance? 100% unequivocally, yes. Part of your due diligence before going on any board is to do that, in fact, preliminary work. A question like, do you have director insurance? Do you cover directors? Would be a large reason why I'd make a decision to go on or not going on. Great question. Absolutely. I look at it like insuring your car. It's an absolute necessity. It's not a cost, it's an investment.
Great, thanks, Mark. It doesn't look like we've got any further questions, but of course, just reach out directly to myself or Mark if you would like to find out any other information. And thank you, everybody, for attending today. Thank you, Axos, for being our webinar partner this month. Thank you, Mark, for presenting as always. And we'll see you next month.
Thanks, guys. Have a great month. All the very best.